This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
If you're interested in listening ad-free, go to patreon.com/the SCP Experience. There you can enjoy my ad-free podcast and never have to listen to ads again. That's patreon.com/the SCP Experience. Now time for the story. We had been hiking for only an hour when one of the men requested that we stop. "Sorry," I said, without turning around to look at him. "We've got a schedule to keep. We're losing daylight." A short silence followed, but I knew it wouldn't be the end of it. I continued through the Scottish countryside for a few steps before the man spoke again.
"Listen here, Slattery,"
the man said, spitting my name out like it was a mouthful of dirt.
"We're paying you to show us the way, but that doesn't mean that you dictate all aspects of the trip. We're here to enjoy ourselves, and in order for me to enjoy myself, I need to take a break and get this goddamn pack off my back."
I smiled to myself as I stopped walking. By the time I turned around, I had hidden the smile away. On my face was a look that I imagined these men were used to getting. Subservient, acquiescent, downtrodden. Apparently, the look was adequate because the man, Kyle Birchman, smirked as he looked at me. Along with Birchman, I was leading two other men on the camping trip. It was clear to me from the get-go that Birchman was the alpha of the group, but the other two, Teddy Gerhardt and Max Oberschmidt, were probably just as used to getting their way as Kyle was. They all came from money. That was easy to see by just looking at their gear, listening to the way they talked, and noting how clearly uncomfortable they felt being outdoors for any length of time. I knew the only reason they were here was because the area was off-limits to normal people. People without money. There's something about telling a certain type of uber-rich person that he can't do something. It just makes him want to do it more. Kyle Birchman was the tallest of them, and also the darkest, with his black hair, overly tanned skin, and the dark circles around his sunken eyes. He was about as tall as me, although slightly thinner, making him somewhere around 6'3". And just under 200 pounds. Teddy Gerhardt had thinning blonde hair and immaculately manicured hands. He was the shortest of the lot and, so far, the quietest. Max Oberschmidt was the joker, his snide comments serving to make him laugh harder than anyone else. I got the impression that the other two men were laughing at his jokes, if they could be called jokes, out of an automatic politeness and deference to his ego. Max had coiffed brown hair and was wearing all brand new gear. I didn't think he'd ever been camping before, although it was clear that he was out to give the impression that he had. The three men slung their packs off and sat down next to the trail on clumps of mat grass and rocks covered in woolly fringe moss. I stood with my pack on, looking up trail at the edge of the forest we would be entering in the next couple of hours. After 15 minutes of listening to some of the most inane talk I'd ever heard, the three men were ready to press on. As we reached the edge of the forest in the early afternoon, I stopped and adjusted my boots, making sure that they were on securely and that the inner protective layer was in position. I wasn't taking any chances.
"Those are some boots you got on, Slattery,"
Teddy Gerhardt said.
"Where did you get them? They look kind of uncomfortable."
"Custom made," I said, smiling.
"They're a little uncomfortable, but they're worth every penny."
Max shook his head.
"Those boots are shit,"
he said.
"Look at mine. Custom made, too, but they're actually nice. They have seal fur lining the inside, which is warmer than any synthetic material. Plus, they're made of shell cordovan leather. You know what that is? It's horsehide, that's what. You're looking at $5,000 boots, gentlemen."
Unabashed pride beamed off of Max like the summer sun glinting off a mirror. His two friends nodded their heads in envy. I could almost see them filing the information away in their heads. Note to self, get custom boots made with seal pelt and horse leather.
Mine don't cost that much,
I said,
but I like them just fine. You can't afford $5,000 boots, Kyle scoffed. We're not even paying you that much for this trip.
You have no idea how much I'm getting paid for this, I thought to myself, smiling politely at Kyle. We pushed on, deeper into the forest made up mainly of Scots pine, oak, birch, and alder trees. The cloud cover combined with the canopy to steal away what little sunlight was available, and the shadows deepened as we made our way toward the area where we were going to camp for the night. I brought out my flashlight and held it in my hand as we hiked. I listened for sounds of animals in the underbrush and kept my head moving to scan the area. It was only a matter of time before they found us. Not an hour had passed before Max, who was at the back of our little group, wanted to stop.
I need to stop,
he said, sounding weary.
Now.
We stopped hiking, and the other men took their packs off to sit down.
What the hell, Max?
Kyle shouted, pointing down at Max's right foot.
Holy shit,
Max said, looking down. His fancy boot had been sliced through, and he was bleeding out of his ankle, the blood running down the horse leather. It was a roughly disc-shaped slice, as if a sharp, round cookie cutter had attacked him.
When did that happen?
Teddy asked, the fear in his voice plain.
I don't know,
Max said, eyes wide and staring at his wound.
I can't even feel it. You can't feel it? How's that possible?
Kyle said. I had my pack off and was digging out a first aid kit when all three men looked at me expectantly.
It's not that bad,
I said.
I'll take care of it. Not that bad,
Kyle said.
He's missing a chunk out of his ankle. I think I can see bone. We need to get him to a hospital.
Of course you can see bone, I said, kneeling at Max's foot.
There's not much flesh on the ankle. Even a small cut can expose bone in that area. He'll make it just fine once I bandage it up. Can we talk about how that happened?
Teddy said.
Are there razor-sharp boulders around here or something?
There are sharp rocks in the area. Maybe he scraped against one,
I said.
Maybe his boots aren't so great for actual hiking after all.
You don't know shit,
Max said to me.
That's plain to see by looking at what you're wearing. Now shut up and patch me up. I'll be fine.
See? I said, looking at the other two men.
He'll be fine.
We made it to the campsite without further incident, and with an hour of daylight left for setup. Max had started to feel the wound about 30 minutes after I patched it up. He'd started complaining shortly after. He threw down his pack and leaned against a tree trunk. He propped his injured foot up on a rock.
I don't know about this,
he said.
I'm not feeling so good. Maybe we should go back.
We will not be hiking at night, I said, pulling my tent out of my pack.
You'll do whatever the hell we tell you to,
Kyle said.
Or you won't get paid.
You are welcome to hike back out tonight, I said, but I won't be joining you. I don't care if I don't get paid. I don't hike in these woods at night.
Kyle and Max glared at me, but Teddy spoke up on my behalf.
He's right. Besides, more hiking isn't going to help Max. He needs to rest. Then we can hike back out tomorrow.
The other men said no more on the subject, but I could feel them glaring at me as I set up my tent. I had crossed a line by refusing their orders. They clearly weren't used to people saying no to them. When I was done setting up my tent, I ventured off into the forest to take a leak and gather some firewood. It was almost full dark, and I kept my flashlight in hand as I went. I could hear the forest coming alive with nocturnal creatures. I had to be careful. When I was taking a leak, I felt something on my left boot. I quickly aimed the flashlight down and saw one of the little creatures there, frozen in the light. It looked like a mix between a large rat and a beetle. It had a segmented body covered in dark fur and thick, hairless legs like a beetle's, ending in savage-looking paws. It had little red eyes and bat-like ears. I had caught it trying to slice through my boot with one of its long and sharp claws located on its forepaws. Thanks to the metal plating in my boot, it hadn't been able to get through.
Sneaky little bastard,
I whispered, keeping the light on it while I finished my business. When I was done, I kicked it away from me. It lay off in the forest for several seconds before I heard it get up and scurry off. Getting back to the campsite, I was surprised to find that both Teddy and Kyle had managed to get their tents up. Max had taken off his fancy boots and was still lying back against the tree trunk, his eyes closed. I built a fire while Teddy and Kyle each went into the woods to heed the call of nature. With the fire built, I sat on a log with my flashlight on and the beam pointing down around my feet to illuminate them in a pool of light. I watched as one of the little creatures came out of the darkness and went straight for Max, who still had his eyes closed. It stopped a foot or so away from him and licked its sharp claws, coating them in a powerful anesthetic, which is what had prevented Max from feeling the cut the first time. It moved toward Max's uninjured foot, which was protected by nothing but a sock. It seemed to hesitate at the ankle area, apparently seeing a more attractive target further up the leg. It moved quickly, slicing through Max's expensive hiking pants at the calf area, taking with it a large, circular slice of bloody flesh. Max twitched, but didn't open his eyes. By the light of the fire, I could see more of the creatures moving in. I stood up and moved away from the campfire, keeping my flashlight pointed down at my feet the whole time. Finding a tree branch at the right height, I used the length of a paracord attached to the butt of my flashlight to hang it from the branch. I stood in that protective cone of light while the creatures moved in on Max. A scream sounded from the woods, off in the direction Teddy had gone. I smiled. A yell came from where Kyle had gone, and I heard his desperate rush through branches and underbrush as he came running back toward the campsite. I looked back over to Max, to find that he now had chunks of flesh missing from his legs and arms. He was bleeding profusely, the coppery smell overpowering the smell of burning wood from the campfire. One of the creatures scuttled up his chest to his face, which caused him to open his eyes, finally. The creature sliced off his nose and took it in his mouth, running and jumping off Max's chest as the man screamed and swatted at it. He began convulsing, looking at the state of his body, which was now almost completely soaked in blood. He looked up at me, accusingly, just before he died. I held his gaze, watching as his life slipped away. Moments later, Kyle came crashing back into camp. He came right up to me, apparently oblivious to the mess that had been his friend Max. I could see that both Kyle's ankles were bleeding, his boots sliced through.
"There's something out there," he cried. "Little rodents! They're cutting me up! They're cutting me up!"
He invaded my circle of light, clutching at my jacket. I shoved him off of me, sending him sprawling on the ground next to the campfire. All around, the creatures moved in.
"I don't know what you did," I said to him, "but you pissed some very powerful people off."
Kyle looked up at me with a terrified look on his face.
"What?"
he said. I pointed down to his right, where one of the creatures had just taken a slice out of his forearm. He looked down at it and swung at all the other creatures in waiting. They all moved back, but only far enough to get out of his reach. He seemed to realize what was protecting me, and he put one bloody hand into his jacket pocket, pulling out a flashlight. Before he could get it on, I stepped forward and kicked it out of his hand, sending it into the dark forest.
"Mr. Drake says goodbye,"
I said to him, stepping back into my circle of light. Realization dawned on him then. I could see that he knew why he was dying. He knew exactly what he'd done to deserve this death. I didn't know what it was. I didn't want to know. But it was important that he knew. Those were my instructions. He tried to fight off the creatures, but they soon enveloped him, taking all the flesh they could find with their long, sharp claws. A few minutes passed, and I found myself alone with two mutilated bodies and tattered, expensive clothing. I could see more bone than flesh when all was done. Their lips had been removed and their eyes spared. They both stared up at me with skeleton grins and unblinking eyes. I was confident that Teddy was dead, but I had to make sure. So I made my way into the forest carefully, heading to where I'd heard his scream come from earlier. I kept my flashlight shining down around my feet the whole time. Teddy was dead. He'd fallen face down, and the creatures had been at his back and sides. I started back to the campsite. I was going to hike out. There was no way I could sleep out here, not even with my flashlight on the whole night. I would need to file a police report as soon as I got out. Waiting until morning would mess the timeline all up and throw the shadow of suspicion over me. I couldn't have that. I was about 30 yards from the dying campfire when my flashlight started flickering. I had another flashlight and spare batteries in my backpack at the campsite. I could hear the creatures in the woods all around me. They were still hungry. I banged on the flashlight, trying to get it to work. It continued to flicker. Well, shit, I thought. Time to make a run for it. My flashlight died. The night poured in on me. I ran. Instances of SCP-625 are nocturnal creatures identical to many species of rodentia. All instances have extremely sensitive eyes and ears and have two claws between 12 and 16 centimeters in length on each foreleg. SCP-625 specimens have been observed licking their claws frequently. Analysis of SCP-625's saliva has revealed the presence of a powerful local anesthetic, which is produced by a specialized gland located in each specimen's body. SCP-625 specimens will sharpen their claws whenever possible, resulting in an edge that is capable of cutting through flesh and most clothing materials. Specimens of SCP-625 may be subdued by bright lights or ultrasonic noise. This state will last for approximately 80 seconds after the removal of the offending stimulus. When not in a subdued state, instances of SCP-625 are hostile to humans. SCP-625 will attempt to approach any human subject without the subject noticing. If it goes unnoticed, SCP-625 will use its claws to remove a radial slab approximately 3 centimeters in height from each ankle of the subject, attempting to leave the bone intact. Due to the anesthetic produced by SCP-625, the subject will not experience pain. It is possible for subjects to suffer from severe blood loss before becoming aware of their condition. Hey guys, thanks for listening. I want to give you all a quick heads up regarding some upcoming political ads you may start hearing leading up to this year's presidential election. These ads do not represent my own political viewpoint. So if you hear a political ad play on the podcast and it's not in my own voice, then it has absolutely nothing to do with me personally as a podcaster. Thank you again for being a dedicated listener of mine, and I can't wait to have another amazing year with you guys. I'll see you in the next episode.